It's Tony Nash here with Plugged and Unplanned, and I have Robert Gerrish, who is the author of The 1 Minute Commute, a businessman, and recently sold his business to Koshi in the last 12 months and his organization. And he's an expert in running your own show from home. He was just telling me earlier that the heartland of business is one-man businesses or one-person, one-woman businesses. And that's an interesting aspect because 70%, you were saying.
More than 70%.
More than 70%.
Yeah, 74%, I think, of Australian small businesses are one-person businesses.
Incredible. Yeah. And that's, I mean, obviously I started my business as a one-person business. It grew quickly. So from your experience then, Robert, is a one-person business always going to be a one-person business? Or is that their plan? I just want to work for myself. I just want to work. Do people end up working in your home? You know, how does that all kind
of... Yeah, okay. Well, it's interesting, actually. When I was more involved with Flying Solo, the business, as you say, that I sold last year, we used to do research every year with our audience. So, you know, quite a big research, 1,500 people every couple of years. And we'd look at why they started their business and what their sort of plans for the future were. And it's very interesting. And a lot of people that were active within the Flying Solo community were one person and intended to stay small. That's not to say that everybody who starts small does want to stay that way. But I think, to be honest, a lot of people, when they start, they're not actually sure quite what they're doing. We'd all love to think that everybody sits and plans and strategizes and has a real kind of game plan from day one. But I think in truth, a lot of people don't. They know they want to do their own thing. They want to get started. They want to see what it's like. And then a little way down the track, they'll often make a decision. Do I want to scale and grow this? Do I want to keep it small and easily manageable? And then I guess at that sort of point, where people, those that do decide to want to kind of scale and grow, well, they'd probably leave our kind of ecosystem anyway. But there's an increasingly large number of people that are running their businesses as a lifestyle business, so designed to support the way they want to live. And for many, that is a very small business, one they can run from home whilst they're perhaps bringing up kids, or they might be running it as a side hustle and carry on with a fairly big corporate job. So it's, you know, I think as each year goes by, the options and the opportunities are increasing. So
that's interesting. So what you're saying is that a lot of them may be a business, but it's a business outside of their normal working week?
Yeah, I wouldn't say a lot, but for a growing percentage. And a number of them have been doing that initially, starting to say, okay, do I enjoy this business? Am I going to enjoy building this business? Is there a need for my business? So for a lot of people, certainly if we get to them early enough, we say, well, a good way to do that is to carry on with your job and do this, you know, kind of evenings and weekends. It's what Richard Branson famously talked about a while ago, that, you know, he really promotes the notion of starting a business alongside your job, if you like. And I think for an increasing number, that is a real option, particularly given the easy access to business.
That's interesting because Booktopia really started that way. Even though I'm in business with my brother and my sister, my brother-in-law, and we had another business, an internet marketing consultancy.
Yeah.
I started Booktopia as an evening project on a budget of $10 per day. And it grew from there. So it's a similar kind of thing. We had no plan. There was no vision.
Okay.
We really had no idea. Mm. And how we could do it is that we had done a consulting job to get Angus and Robertson to the top of Google.
Right.
And through that, we were introduced to the company that they used to manage their website and fulfill their orders. So we used the same company to launch.
So you had a very nice kind of look under the trunk through the client that you were working with.
Not as obvious as the intimate under... What we did know is we knew what it took to drive traffic to their website.
Okay.
What we didn't know, or how it eventuated, is that we actually set up a meeting. My brother set up a meeting with this company who was managing their site.
Yeah.
because they manage 80 bookstores websites.
Right.
And his idea was maybe this company should introduce us to all their other customers so we could get them all to the top of Google and we would make them more money and we would get more project work.
Sure.
It was at that meeting where they said, look, no, we're not interested in introducing us, introducing you to our customers.
Mm.
What we are interested in doing is just continuing to manage bookstore websites and fulfill those orders. And I said, well, how does it all work? And they said, look, it takes 10 minutes to set up a new bookstore. You give us the name of your bookshop, and within 10 minutes, you can have a bookstore website up and running.
Wow.
And it was then that I said, oh, that sounds interesting.
Yes.
And the owner of the company said, yeah, but no, internet-only businesses have made anything out of it.
Right.
It's all we do off the back of a traditional bookstore, that one on the website. Okay. And that's how it started. And because there was no vision, we had no idea. You know, my brother actually wrote the projected sales plans, and we were going to go one sale a day for 3 months, and after 3 months we'd get to two sales a day,
right?
And then so on and so forth. Well, you know, we were doing 30,000 a month by month four.
Wow!
And it just, you know, by the end of the year we were doing $100,000 a month, and it didn't take long that we realized, oh, this is something quite interesting. And it was only after 3 years that we decided to build our own website.
Yeah,
we left the other company, we moved to a warehouse. We bought some shelves on eBay and we started doing it all ourselves.
Yeah. Well, you see, that's interesting. So with yours, you know, again, the start of your business is quite typical to how a lot of very small businesses start. But clearly you realized very early on you're onto something and you grabbed it. And I think what, you know, the majority definitely of the audience that kind of I deal with are more in professional services than they are in products and services, or more than they are in products.
Yeah.
So typically these are people that are selling their expertise. So designers, writers, architects, that kind of group of people, practitioners, health practitioners. And so with those people, the kind of the means, the opportunity of scaling is somewhat different. And they get to a point where, okay, I either need to replace myself, replicate myself and scale in that way, or I need to just get to the maximum that I can charge per hour or per project or whatever and run a business like that. So, and it's those businesses particularly, I think, that once they get to a nice level of revenue and they're doing the work they want with the people they like in the way that they want, that for many people is a very beautiful spot. You know, that's a place where people like to stay. That's how I've run my own business for a number of years. And certainly how I view this next stage in my life is I don't want to grow a business, but I want to get the maximum that I can from the work that I do.
So. Right. So in your work and with the people that you meet, is the issue around mental health or like isolation or because they're consultants, are they, like, do the ones that do better have more external meetings? I know you're talking about the 1 minute commute.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's why it's a best-selling book at the moment.
Yeah.
So stuck at home, which is great.
Yeah.
You're right next to everything and the time saving and you can do it all in your pajamas.
Mm.
But is there anything around?
Is there a downside?
You know, what are those obstacles that people actually need to address in terms of social contact?
Yeah, okay. Well, look, that's a very good point. And certainly mental health is an issue in small business. There is no doubt. Is it more noticeable in one-person businesses than in sort of 5 or 10 or 20-person businesses? No, it isn't. There's a lot of talk about isolation in very small businesses as being a large issue. But certainly in the research that we've done and in the dialogue I've had with people, isolation isn't that big an issue. Because most people who have the gumption and the drive to start their own business are generally people that are able to engage and connect with others. Now, not everybody does. And so there's lots of talk about small business failure, and you and I have heard lots of statistics about that. And whilst a good number of small businesses don't work, it's often their reason for cessation is not because of some massive financial disaster. It's because the person realizes this isn't good for me. This is not good for me to be sat in my home working by myself. So a lot of those people make the decision after a short time to cease their business and go back to employment. Right. So that, to my mind, is not a business failure any more than moving from one house to another house doesn't mean that the first house failed. It just means you prefer the other one.
Yeah.
So, you know, so a lot of, so to answer your kind of question is that, connection is very important. Connection and avoiding isolation is really, really important for people who do work by themselves or work in a small, small business. But in this day and age, it's so easy to stay connected. So it's just a matter of, I talk about this at length in the book, about understanding where to connect with people, whether it's through face-to-face networking, online media, or ideally a mixture of both. There's a number of places that we can connect and engage, and we should. You know, you can drive yourself nuts if you're having strategic conversations with your cat. You know, it's not a good look. So, yes, we need to connect, we need to engage, we need to stay involved. But there's a number of ways we can do that. And, you know, I talk about that at length, and it's something that I bang on about to anyone who'll listen, quite honestly.
So the quality of life in general, did people see it remarkably improving?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes, they do, I'm pleased to say. So again, some of the last research that we ran, we actually asked people to gauge their enjoyment of life on a number of factors, ranging from, you know, satisfaction, fulfillment, to their role as parents and partners. Am I a better parent? Am I a better partner? And all of the measures, people who had been running their business for a little while and that were kind of, you know, ironed out some of the peaks and troughs, absolutely love what they're doing. So, and I think for those that, you know, I wrote this book really for the people that aren't, you know, for the people that either haven't started or are in a business where it's not much fun and they're not getting what they expected. Because my belief is that we can turn around those businesses, but there are certain things invariably traps that people end up falling into, which it causes them to get fed up with their business, not build a successful business. You know, we have lots of talk these days about the whole busyness thing. It's very easy to keep ourselves really busy, but in a lot of cases, we're not keeping ourselves busy where we should be being busy. You know, we can be distracted any number of times during the course of a day, but are we working where we need to be working? You know, that's often at the core of success and enjoyment in your work, I think.
So when someone's reading your book or part of a survey, is the biggest fear or obstacle the idea of where's the money going to come from, or is it what do people fear the most about leaping out of the security of being employed? Like, does it come because they get one great contract?
Right.
From a previous client or something?
How, well, it's certainly okay. Well, there's a few questions in there, and they're all good ones. The thing is this, a number of people do start in a way that I call the accidental business. And that's exactly the scenario that you just talked about, where somebody through circumstance, either perhaps they've had a baby or they've been retrenched, they find themselves in a position where they're momentarily not sure what the next step is. And they maybe have some time on their hands. Often what can happen in that situation, somebody says, well, look, if you're not doing much at the moment, would you have a go at doing this for me? Will you just do this for me? And often that creates what I call the accidental business. And that's a business where, you know, somebody is being asked to do a little bit of work, and then someone says, oh, if you did that for that person, will you do it for me? Before they know it, they kind of got a business, which is often in those early stages really enjoyable and very pleasantly surprising. But if they're not careful, they can get a little way down the track and realize that actually all I'm doing is a lot more work for a lot less money than when I had a job. Because what's been missing in that whole path is any real plan and structure and strategy. So that's a key thing that I kind of look at. The other thing that you were looking at there is this, you know, this whole notion of fear. And I think for many, when they're starting, they have the opposite of fear. They have a confidence and bravado that is on occasion unhealthy. They're so full of passion that they become blinkered and don't see the blindingly obvious.
Right.
And that can be a trap in itself. They can absolutely get fired up. They'll go and spend, you know, $3,000 with somebody to have a schmicko website done. They'll get business cards done. They'll do all these things. And then the business doesn't work. And it's interesting. There was some research done in the States last year where they surveyed over 100, in fact, 101 startup businesses, where each of these businesses had had over $1 million of investment, and all these businesses had failed. Staggering. So they'd got investors up to $1 million each. They'd started, and they'd all bombed. And the overriding reason why they bombed, 80% of them bombed, because there was no market need. Nobody wanted what they were selling, be those products or services. And you think of that, you know, you must sit there thinking, that's madness. And I certainly think, how can that be? You know, but it's what can happen is we're so fueled with passion is sometimes what we don't do is we stop and think, actually, does anybody want this? And invariably what businesses do is they will talk to friends and family. Now, friends and family will either, they'll do one of two things. They'll either say, your business, Tony, is the best idea. It's going to go gangbusters. Or they'll say the reverse. They'll say, you haven't got a chance. Don't do it. Stay in a sensible job. So friends and family can't be trusted, unfortunately. They will give you an opinion, but it's not necessarily the right opinion. What we need to do, and I'm sure, at least I hope you'll endorse this, is we need to be out talking to the people that we think are our customers. And by that, I mean literally being out talking to them. Go and stand in the street if you need to. Go where they go. Ask questions of them. Confront them. If I were doing this, would you buy this? If I did, what would you pay for it? But a lot of businesses don't. They get started. So they've invested often far too much in sort of background stuff and then find that nobody wants what they're selling. You know, that's horrible. That's a horrible situation.
I have heard that and I do know that that happens.
Mm.
And I'm always amazed when I hear people do that.
Mm.
They put so much into the website, into the brochure, the logo, the graph. If for the listeners today, there's a website called archive.org.
Yes.
The Wayback Machine.
Yes.
If people want to go, what it does is it takes an HTML photograph of a website, and it just so happens that that it passed by Booktopia's website on day three of our business.
Ah.
The day that we sold our first book, which is incidentally the total sales for the whole day.
Right.
So people can have a look at what Booktopia looked like when we started. Yeah. And I know that it was way below what we needed.
Yeah.
But it was something. It was we were run. Up and we were running.
Yeah. There's an example that that I use when I speak to people and I say, and I do a little bit of sort of coaching, helping individuals, and I do quite a lot of speaking at small business events and things. And I will talk to people and they'll say, you know, well, how do I do this, Robert? How do I do this research? And one of the best ways I think is very old school. It's literally to go out with a little flipboard or notebook with your product and your service and literally stop people in the street. Or if that's too broad an audience, then, as I say, hang out where those people hang out and ask them questions. And there's an example I use of there's a delightfully crazy guy who stands outside a local railway station, is where I live, and he doesn't sell anything, but he wears a sandwich board with a big smiley face on it. And all he's doing is he's standing there cheering up people as they go. He stands out there at rush hour, and he's just waving at people. And I watch him, and I sit on the bus sometimes when I go into town, and I look at this man, and I think, you know, that guy is connecting, because he talks to people in the street as well. He's on a very busy sort of pedestrian area as well. He is connecting and talking with more people in a day than an awful lot of small businesses do who are just obsessed with Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. You know, they are banging out messages that nobody's paying any attention to. Or listening to or engaging with. Right. Whereas this guy stands out there for an hour in the morning and an hour at night, and I swear to you, when I've sat there in traffic, I must see him connect and touch 10, 20, 30 people. You know, now imagine doing that when you're talking about your business. How powerful is that with a view to getting some kind of gauge on is anybody interested in what I'm doing? You know, we need to do a lot more of that.
So we're at a good point to end week one. We'll take a short break. You'll come back in week two. We'll be back in a second. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.